All right, so we're here with the second half of our interview here with the founder of LAFB Network and the co-host of the Believe LA Football podcast, Ryan Darude. We kind of went in through how he started LAFB Network and, you know, just what he hopes to achieve with LAFB Network in our first episode, so make sure you tune into that. Really fascinating stuff. But now we want to get into some actual football stuff. You ready to hear all this stuff, Ryan?
Yeah, can't wait.
I just said Ryan twice. I'm that stoked.
I was wondering if that was a nickname or something. I was like, Ryan, all right.
That's the nerves of talking to a guy of Ryan's stature. I think that's part of it. So we definitely want to jump into both the Chargers and the Rams, but we're going to start with the Chargers first because they kind of had some breaking news that happened just over the weekend, over the playoff weekend. They have hired their new head coach, Brandon Staley, who actually has connections to the other LA football team, the Rams. He was their former defensive coordinator. So, I mean, just, Ryan, what are your initial thoughts about Brandon Staley being the head coach for the Chargers now?
I love Brandon Staley. So, I know there was a lot of concern by fans initially in the process just because he's, you know, first-year defensive coordinator, don't know a lot about him. He was with as a linebacker coach with Fangio for 3 years before that, and that before that he was with like John Carroll University and, you know, small school guys. So but I love the hire. I didn't want the Rams to lose him, but once it started looking like he was picking up steam, I'm very happy he's staying in LA, so I got to continue covering him with the Chargers. But yeah, we'll get into it more, but yeah, I think it's a slam dunk hire. I think he's great. Just the way he schemes things, the way he leads men, what he was able to do with the Rams defense going from like 13th overall last year to first overall this year in just about every single category, how he made players better. Obviously, when you have guys like Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, it makes your job a little easier, but he made guys like Darius Williams, Troy Hill, John Johnson, Leonard Floyd, guys like that just really elevated their game. And a lot of that was schematically what he was able to do and put them in positions to succeed. So I think he's going to put together a great staff for the Chargers. Obviously, he'll shore up the defense, but he'll bring in some good offensive guys, which we can get into staff talk, I'm sure. But yeah, just off the surface, guys, I was stoked by the hire for the Chargers. I think they got a good one.
Yeah, speaking of the staff changes I saw on Twitter today, apparently he's trying to poach the Colts special teams coordinator away because they have some shared history at John Carroll. So I'm not happy with the hire. Stay away from my team.
Well, Rams fans aren't either. And, you know, I hate being that guy to, like, pat myself on the back, but I've been saying for 2 months that he was going to be a head coach, and I was like, he very well could be linked to the Chargers just because I think they want to go with a defensive guy. And, you know, he will be able to, a lot of the deficiencies with the Chargers this year were giving up leads late, just defensive breakdowns. And that's what Staley didn't allow to happen with the Rams. So I thought that fit was good. And then just the fact that he's moved two times in 2 years, it made sense to go to a team that he didn't have to move. He would just, you know, pick up shop and he's right here in LA still. So not to be that guy patting myself on the back, but it's been about 2 months I've been saying he's likely to be the guy of the Chargers, and broke last night that he was.
See, there you go. So before we go too deep into the Chargers' future, let's talk a little bit about their past, and especially with Anthony Lynn, who obviously was fired. What went into that firing? Like, what were the core reasons? Was it because of those weird, poorly disciplined moments where, you know, the Chargers run it on 4th and 2 with 20 seconds left, or, you know, they're meandering about as the half's about to run out and they could have kicked the field goal, but they didn't. Was it like that kind of stuff, or were there some deeper reasons for his firing?
Yeah, if you listen to our show ever, Frosty and I were actually big Anthony Lynn guys. I think he's just, obviously, it goes without saying, everyone around the league says this, just what a great human being he is. He's a, you know, good leader. He never lost the locker room even after a bunch of losses. That team continued playing their butts off for him. So we were really a champion for him to maybe be able to stick around. And obviously he went on that 4-game winning streak at the end. You know, he had mismanagement issues that I know fans and a lot of media, they like to really point that out for any coach, really. Me personally, I had this belief, and then also talking to Frosty, who played in the league a lot, he kind of, you know, supported it. But I think that's a little overblown. When you're a coach, you have guys on your staff that are supposed to help manage the clock, are supposed to help with timeouts, and he wasn't getting the right calls in. You know, certain guys weren't helping him out. So part of that is his job to hire the right guys to do it. Part of it's his job. It falls on him to make the right decisions. I just think that was a little overplayed. But I think ultimately what it led to is, you know, after that Patriots game, when it was like the worst loss in franchise history, just getting blown out, and then the Bills loss right before that, which had obviously end of game drama, That, I think, was where the decision was kind of made. And I think it was more so the fact that the fan base was so turned on him. And you look at a Chargers team that's trying to get their footing in Los Angeles, hopefully going to have fans in the stands this next season. And so I think it was more of a decision at the top saying, you know what, we got to win the fan base back. We're still fighting for eyeballs in LA. And we love Anthony Lynn. We think he can win with this team. But right now the fans have completely jumped ship. And if we bring him back for another year, I think a lot of fans would boycott, you know, buying tickets and stuff like that. Whereas, hey, they bring in a new fresh face. It's a fresh start. Guys can get excited about it. They have all offseason to talk about the new coaching staff and all this. So you get fans really pumped up. And I know that's a silly reason to make a football decision. But when you're a team in a new market trying to fight for fans, it's one that needs to be taken seriously. And so I think that's more so what it was, not necessarily Anthony Lynn's coaching. I think it's just the fans played their hand and ownership said, you know what, we're going to listen and let's make a move. And last thing I'll say, I think Brandon Staley was absolutely the right hire. I think he's a phenomenal coach. But in a sense, they also poached, you know, the casual Rams fans, not diehards, but casual fans that will now probably watch Charger games because they're like, I like Brandon Staley. I'll watch both games. I'll buy tickets to a Charger game. So they kind of did it smartly in that marketing aspect, too, that they can get more local fans that were maybe watching more Rams games now that'll watch both.
So I'm glad you said that, kind of like get the fans pumped up, because my next question is, what should fans be pumped up about Staley specifically? What should worry them? And can he succeed where Lynn failed? And if so, where? How's that for a line?
That's good. That's good. So let's start with what should worry them. And I think really the only thing is just the experience, which I'm not worried about. Anyone that's been in the room with the guy speaks so highly of just his smarts, his the way people gravitate to him, the way the defense bought in such a short time with the Rams. All his players speak so highly of him. So I don't think his experience will be an issue. But if there's anything to worry about, that obviously is one of them. What they should be excited about is just the scheme he develops. I mean, we saw how good Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey and these guys were, and now he's going to get the likes of Derwin James and Joey Bosa and Kenneth Murray and Drew Tranquil, and we'll see those guys' game elevate even more. And on top of that, some of the lesser-known guys, Mike Davis, Rayshon Jenkins, we'll see their game elevate because that's what he did with guys like, you know, I mentioned Troy Hill and Darius Williams. So I think we'll see the defensive side of the ball is going to be – this is probably going to be a top-five unit next year. It should have been this year. It still was about top 10. But with that talent, they'll be a top-five unit easily next year. But the other thing that a lot of people don't know about that they should be excited about is Brandon Staley played quarterback younger. So he played on the offensive side of the ball. So a lot of people think like, oh man, why do we hire a defensive guy? You have Justin Herbert. We need to develop him. But he knows quarterbacks. He knows, and that's why he's been so successful at defense, because he thinks like a quarterback. The way he schemes stuff up, it's seeing what the offense does through a quarterback's lens, and he can run disguises that then mess with the quarterback. But he can, and then coach Justin Herbert, put the right pieces in place to develop Justin Herbert. So there's a ton to be excited about, just what he'll bring from a scheme standpoint. But I also think from a leadership standpoint, he's just a great, great young mind and an innovative guy that this team is really going to have fun with. And he's a good fit for the city of Los Angeles.
Awesome. So I think you kind of covered this already where this is their first defensive head coach, I should say, since Marty Schottenheimer back in the early 2000s. He was there from 2002 to 2006. So kind of makes sense why they make that switch up there. And then, like you said, with that experience playing quarterback previously, he can understand the schemes there as a quarterback to help with Justin Herbert's growth there. The big thing for you that I kind of want to ask, though, is just who does he tab as his offensive coordinator? Because I think the big thing that you need to address when you're a defensive-minded head coach is that you have to nail that offensive coordinator position. Because, I mean, we're in an offense-driven league, unfortunately. And especially with a promising young quarterback in Justin Herbert, you need to make sure that development is on the right track going forward. So does he stick with, you know, maybe promoting Pep Hamilton to offensive coordinator? I know he's sort of getting his name a buzz as far as like some of the offensive coordinator positions elsewhere, some of the other head coaching vacancies. Or does he, you know, look for somebody from the Rams previously? I know Robert Saleh, he was just hired in New York. He took Mike LaFleur with him as the offensive coordinator for the Jets. Or does he just completely off the board and he hires just externally from somewhere else, either the college ranks or the NFL ranks? So do you have any names in mind as far as who would be a good OC to pair up with Staley?
Yeah, obviously, I think in his interviews, he laid out a plan that management felt comfortable with because I'm sure that was one of the biggest things is, hey, we have this phenom quarterback. What are you going to do to continue his development? And I'm sure he said, okay, this is my philosophy on him, but also here's coaches I want to bring in with me. And you mentioned it, Pep Hamilton, also Shane Steichen, who's currently the OC. Either one I think would be fine to keep. I think they did a good job. I know there was some love loss for Shane Steichen for some play calling, but overall you have to credit Shane in his first year as OC, and you know, being a first-year coordinator, he's only going to grow from there. So he's definitely a guy they could keep. Pep Hamilton, absolutely a guy that they would want to keep if possible. But if they want to look outside of the Chargers organization and obviously look at his former team with the Rams, I think Kevin O'Connell's a really good name. I know he's currently their OC, so it seems like a lateral move. But he doesn't call any plays with the Rams. Sean McVay is fully in charge of play calling. So this is a move where we could come to, you know, the Chargers, be the play caller, actually have his footprint on the offense, as opposed to, you know, just being kind of the manager, you know, a practice guy. So that's a name to look at. Staley's comfortable with him, knows him. So I would not be surprised at all by that. Another guy from, you know, San Francisco that is a name that I think is linked is, you know, Mike McDaniel, the run coordinator. I know you mentioned LaFleur going with Saul as the passing game coordinator. I personally, nothing against McDaniel, I personally don't see that happening just because the Chargers were trying to get away from the run. That was big. Anthony Lynn was establishing the run. Fans hated it. They're like, we have Justin Herbert, you know, air it out. So I don't know if bringing in a run game coordinator that's, you know, going to be really focused on running the football. I'm not saying that's bad, but I just think for the Chargers, they want to focus on a different plan of attack. But that's a name. And the last one I'll throw out to you, and this is really this will really depend on if Eric Bieniemy gets a coaching job. But if Eric Bieniemy does not get a head coaching job and remains the OC at Kansas City, their quarterback coach is a guy named Mike Kafka, who actually got an interview with the Eagles as a head coach. And this would be a promotion for him to go be OC. He'd call plays. You look, obviously, he's from Andy Reid's tree. We know what the Kansas City offense can do. So just another bright young mind they could pluck and bring him. So Kafka is probably, if you're not going to go with either Kevin O'Connell from the Rams, and you're not going to stick with either Steichen or Pep Hamilton, he would be probably my number one choice if you're going to go outside of the organization.
So just to correct you really quick, Ryan, Mike McDaniel has actually been named the offensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers. So I don't know if he was in the running for possibly being on the Chargers staff, but I think he can eliminate his name off that checklist, unfortunately, if people had their hopes on Mike McDaniel.
Good call. Yeah.
So, I do want to get into, obviously, the big topic with the Chargers besides the head coaching hire is just what an amazing season that Justin Herbert had. Most likely will be the Offensive Rookie of the Year and the overall Rookie of the Year. We're still going to wait to see, obviously, when the awards show happens in a couple weeks from now. But, I mean, just sensational season. And I think you can sort of attribute this to another reason as to why Anthony Lynn got fired, because of his stubbornness to stick with Tyrod Taylor if he was going to be healthy. I mean, ultimately, obviously, he got hurt. And that's why Justin Herbert got inserted into the starting roster, and he just took it from there as to, like, I need to be the starter of this franchise. So, amazing, amazing season, and I think he has a ton of promise in this league. But my question to you, Ryan, is just where do you rank him among all the other young quarterbacks in the league that have been drafted in the past couple of years? Obviously, you got your Joe Burrow at Cincinnati, Tua in Miami, Jalen Hurts now in Philadelphia, Kyler in Arizona, Daniel Jones, Drew Locke of your Denver Broncos, Baker's in the playoffs. I mean, he just got eliminated, unfortunately, but he took them to the playoffs at their first win. Sam Darnold, a lot of people still have high hopes on him. Josh Allen is having such an amazing season. Buffalo took him to an AFC Championship game. And then Lamar Jackson, the 2019 unanimous MVP. So, I mean, just where do you put him amongst those quarterbacks as far as just, like, is he able to hold his own water? Is he the top of the bunch? Is he the bottom? Like, what do you think?
Man, I mean, there's so many good young quarterbacks. I love you go through that list, and it's like,
yes,
this league is in good hands with all the young.
It's great promise for
the
league. Yeah,
a lot of good
exactly.
young talent. And, you know, it's hard to truly rank after one season, but if we're just doing it off this season, he would be, you know, easily, I think, top three. You got to put him up there. I would put him. I always go back and forth with Lamar. This is no discredit because Lamar is a phenomenal athlete, phenomenal quarterback, but we see it when playoff comes. He's a different quarterback, just not quite the. Can't quite carry the team in the playoffs, and I know it's still really early and young in his career. But I would maybe put Herbert, again, just based off 1 year, a little above Lamar. Josh Allen is doing phenomenal things. Looks like a completely different quarterback from when he did, you know, a year or two ago. Him and Herbert are very similar in their attributes, their style of play, their talent level. I think Herbert can surpass him just because as a rookie he did that, and it took Josh Allen, you know, 3 years to get to that level. So, but to actually, it's tough. I just put him top three somewhere in there with, you know, Kyler's good, but I think Kyler was exposable this year. We saw Kyler having kind of a drop off, took the league by storm, you know, 6 weeks in. And then after 6 weeks, defense has kind of figured out how he's doing. He was a little banged up as well, but I think he dropped off a lot down. I mean, both time playing the Rams, he didn't throw for like over 120 yards. So, defenses learned how to slow him down, and Justin Herbert, they never did. Josh Allen, they haven't. So those, I put those two above the rest of the crop. So, yeah, the Chargers fans got to be excited for what they have in Herbert and just the talent he is, and the fact that you go from Phillip Rivers and immediately go to Justin Herbert, and it's got to feel pretty good. If there's a lot of bad things gone wrong with this franchise, it's drafting quarterbacks is not one of them.
Did you see Herbert being this good?
I was higher on Herbert than a lot of people. I know. Obviously, everyone thought he was going to be, you know, the third quarterback taken after Burrow and Tua, and everyone thought he would be, you know, a top 10 pick. But I know there was a lot of reservation if he, you know, if how he could process, if he was a run read quarterback, if, you know, if he got under pressure, how he'd perform. I thought he was going to be good. I think he definitely exceeded my expectations on what he did do, breaking every basically record as a rookie, and with the turmoil that was going on with the Chargers, and just still his focus, his leadership, just how cool, calm, and collective he was. So I did think he was going to have a very good career, just from what I saw at Oregon, how he started off as the sixth quarterback in the depth chart and worked his way to become a starter. So, you know, he went through different things. Oregon didn't have the same offensive talent that, you know, Joe Burrow had at LSU, that Tua had at Alabama, and he still put up ridiculous numbers at Oregon. So I was higher than most, but yeah, he definitely exceeded my expectations for what he was able to do. But I thought he for sure could be a top 10 quarterback in this league. I just didn't think it would happen his rookie season.
if anyone did call that, they are in the vast minority. So I think
yeah.
That's fair. Looking ahead of the Chargers offseason, who gets priority as far as free agents are concerned? Because this offseason, you got Hunter Henry, Melvin Ingram, Denzel Perryman, Nick Vigil, Jahlil Adai. And then, with that said, how much money do you give those guys, whoever you do want coming back? Because you got to look at next year. And it's crazy to think, because I remember when they drafted Dan Feeney and Forrest Lamp in the same draft. I'm like, I get what you're doing. That's a problem, though, because you're going to need to pay both those guys at the same time. So they need to pay both of them and two other starting offensive linemen next offseason. So really for the next 2 years, how do the Chargers go about this free agency period?
Yeah, it's going to be – Tom Telesco has a lot to navigate with. I think right now they're sitting at about $22 million in cap space. Obviously, that'll grow as players actually hit free agency. I don't anticipate Melvin Ingram being back. I think he just in a contract year had a really bad year. No sacks, I believe. Obviously, was injured off and on. He's been a staple in this defense, but I just think what Staley's able to do with defenders, they can get a cheaper option. And another guy that I'll even throw out that wouldn't be cheaper necessarily, but Leonard Floyd from the Rams will be a free agent and had a career year. Would not be shocked if the Chargers try to pursue him instead of re-signing Ingram, and then have that pairing of, you know, Leonard Floyd, Uchenna Nwosu, and Joey Bosa on the edge, which would be a pretty elite three-headed pass rush. But I think just to go kind of down the list, their number one priority probably will be Hunter Henry. The question is, how much money will they allocate to him? Had a great year. His first really year that he's been healthy all year. He missed the last game getting COVID. But as far as just physical health, he was healthy all year, didn't get hurt playing on the franchise tag. I think I saw today that they're bringing the Raiders tight end coach. Staley's bringing him onto his staff to be a, you know, run game coordinator. So we saw what he did with Darren Waller, and that just tells me they could maybe get even more out of Hunter Henry, who is very integral in this offense. That'd be the guy I think they make priority number one. Can they afford him? That is a whole other question, but I think they'll definitely try to keep him around because of how well in sync this offense with him, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, which is another point. Mike Williams, they you know, grabbed his fifth-year option, but they can still, with the new bargaining agreement, they can actually still cut him and not pay him that by a certain – I can't remember the exact deadline, which if they
– You think that happens? You think he gets
– See,
cut?
I don't – here's the thing. Mike Williams is important to this offense. He's a very good receiver. Is he worth $15 million, which is what that fifth-year option is, making him one of the top-paid receivers in the game? That's $15 million they could give to Hunter Henry. That's $15 million they could give to a big pass rusher. And if they can get someone in the draft, another really receiver-heavy draft, someone that does, you know, he's a guy that is a deep threat that can high-point the football, but you don't want to pay a guy that gets 35 receptions a year $15 million. I love Mike Williams. I hope he's a Charger. I just think that money – they could put to better use, which is going to be really hard for them to decide. So those are kind of the two that they're really going to look at. And you mentioned the offensive line. Both started this year. Both stayed healthy most of the part of this year. So they had obviously struggles on offensive line, but those were like the two guys that actually stayed healthy and were the consistent players the whole season. So I think they'll try to bring them both back, but it'll be another position they definitely address in the draft. But obviously free agency is before that. So if they can get them on the cheap, I would anticipate Lamp and Feeney to both return as well.
So I know you kind of touched on this already, and Ted, you did as well, just that with the free agency, you got four starting offensive linemen that are going to hit free agency in the upcoming offseason. You already mentioned Dan Feeney, you already mentioned Forrest Lamb, but you also got Sam Tevy, and you also got Mike Pouncey, who played a good amount of snaps over the course of the season. I know Pouncey was, unfortunately, he got hurt. He missed majority of this season, and then he also missed a good number of last season, too. But, I mean, he's still a big name. He's still a quality center for you guys, and obviously you guys acquired him for stability on the offensive line. But, I mean, just with four key starters hitting the offseason free agent market, just what do you expect this offensive line to look like going into 2021? I know you kind of mentioned maybe they'll go into the draft. Do they re-sign any of these guys? I mean, just because offensive line is kind of where you win as far as an offense. Like, that helps set your pass protection, helps set up the opening lanes for Austin Eckler. I mean, just so, just what do you think the offensive line is going to look like in 2021?
Yeah, well, I mean, the one, I guess, benefit, if you want to look at it from a, you know, glass half pulse full perspective of having, you know, four guys hit free agency, is the weakest unit of this Chargers team was the offensive line. So they were going to have to address revamping it, changing it, you know, doing anything to fix it. So you weren't going to come back with the same five guys you had last year just because it didn't work. Pouncey, I think, unfortunately, unless he takes a big pay cut, I don't think he'll be back. I don't even know if he'll play again. He may decide to retire with the hip injury he had, pretty significant. But if he's willing to come back on the cheap, I think they would certainly love to have him. He's super influential in the locker room, a great leader. And when he is healthy, he's one of the better centers in the NFL, even after this injury. So if he'll come back on the cheap, I think they would certainly welcome him. Obviously, they have Trey Turner and Brian Bulaga locked up on the right side. They had health concerns, but hey, if they can get healthy in the offseason, their right side's set. So then you look at the left side, Sam Tevy, you know, played well, I wouldn't say played well, but they still want to upgrade that position. And then if they do, you know, do the guard, like I mentioned, if they can get Feeney back for cheap or get Forrest Lamp back, who finally played a full season without getting injured, I think they'd like to do that. So to more straight up answer your question, I think they try to get Feeney and Lamp back, both depending on the price. I don't know if they'll bring any external offensive linemen in. I think after that, they'll do it in the draft. And certainly their first pick at 13 will probably be used on an offensive lineman, unless, you know, a flurry of them go in the top 10 and the value just isn't there. But I think they'll certainly be taking an offensive lineman in the first round and probably one or two more throughout the draft to just, you know, rebuild that unit. Because like I said, the right side's good. Now let's just build the left side and figure out what we're doing at center. So I think it'll be a fairly different looking unit, though, going in the next year.
Yeah, protecting Herbert's blind side is very, very important, I would say.
Extremely.
So yeah, addressing the left side would be very important. So you kind of mentioned that injuries were a bit of concern for Mike Pouncey, obviously Forrest Lamp as well, Dan Feeney. There's a lot of players that have kind of dealt with injuries for the Chargers the past couple seasons. I already mentioned a couple there, but guys like Denzel Perryman, Drew Tranquil, Derwin James, obviously, Nasir Adderley missed a lot of time, Hunter Henry, obviously. So my question to you is that, because the Niners kind of went through this as well, in that brief period between Jim Harbaugh and now Kyle Shanahan, where we had lots of players just suffering injuries. And then when Kyle Shanahan came aboard, they sort of cleared out the medical staff. And now we didn't see as many injuries happening as much. Unfortunately, obviously, this year, that Jets game was sort of a different story. You know, that's a sort of like a happenstance injury. But that's kind of my question to you. Like, are all these injuries that the Chargers have suffered, are they more happenstance, sort of like a freak coincidence? Or is there something that needs to be addressed with the medical staff to hopefully prevent some of these serious injuries and taking out some of your key players on both sides of the ball?
You know, that's a great question, Umar, because it's one, the Chargers seem to be plagued with injuries every year. I mean, every year they're decimated, and so you have to ask yourself, is it a medical staff problem? Is it training? Is it all the certain things? And there's kind of two different answers. So one is, unfortunately, Tom Telesco has drafted and signed free agents that have injury history. Mike Pouncey had injury history. Brian Bulaga had some injury history. Trey Turner had injury history. Derwin James had an injury in college at Florida State.
Real quick, another guy, Jason Verrett.
Yeah, Jason Verrett.
From my alma mater, TCU. He was great when he played at TCU, but even when they drafted him, I'm like, man, I can hope he can stay healthy, and that didn't happen, obviously.
Exactly. So that's one of it. They're going after guys that unfortunately have injury history, and so until they say, I know you, the talent's there, you see the tape, how good they can be, but until they change their philosophy, say, you know what? No, we want a guy that's going to be on the field. Even if he's a little lesser talent, he needs to be on the field. And so maybe we'll see this year if they change that philosophy, because that's part of it. Part of it is just bad luck. Chris Harris Jr. has been healthy his entire career, ends up breaking his foot this year. That's just bad luck. So there's certain things that, you know, don't run the right way. But then also I asked Frosty this because, you know, he played in the league 13 years, was relatively healthy. And I asked him, I was like, hey, is there reasons why certain teams have more injuries? And he's like, honestly, you can blame medical staff, but part of it is off-season work. These guys get too big for their own bodies sometimes. So sometimes it's cognizant of the actual player, but also who they're working with in the off-season, that they actually find their correct body weight to play at. Because sometimes guys get too big, and when you're playing over your weight, and I'm not saying fat, just like too much, it sounds crazy, but too much muscle, your knees, your joints, your ACL, your certain things can't handle that, and then you end up tearing things because your body's working so hard just to keep up with how much mass you've put on. So you said part of it is just off-season stuff, whether these guys are hiring the wrong guys, whether they're just pushing themselves too hard, and so that's one thing too. So drafting and signing guys without injury history, getting a little better luck, and then maybe getting a more cognizant, universal off-season programs that keeps guys at the correct playing weight they should be, and that's when you'll start seeing these injuries start dropping off. And I'm not a doctor, that's just kind of what I've heard and my assumptions, but it seems like that's something that actually makes a lot of sense, and hopefully we'll see these Chargers turn the corner on that, and you know, Brandon Staley, coach for a Rams team that until the playoffs really had no injuries all season long and stayed relatively healthy, so hopefully we'll see that spill over to the Chargers organization.
No, I could definitely speak to the playing weight and, like, just understanding your body once you get to the NFL, because, I mean, perfect example is you got Eddie Lacy in Green Bay, who came and had a sensational rookie year, and he thought that he could sort of, like,
Lacy.
Exactly, he could eat whatever the hell he wants, and he could still come back and perform well the next year, but clearly that was not the case. And then just to throw it back a little bit further, I brought his name up before on the podcast. It's David Boston. He was a very upper body type of guy. So he put in all the work up top, but he never put in the leg days as much. And he dealt with a lot of injuries in his legs. And so that sort of suffered and sort of derailed his career later, because, I mean, he was a talent as well in Arizona. And then he played with the Chargers actually for a little bit as well. But I think just understanding what your body is capable of and making sure you're prepared the best you can. I mean, advancement has come such, you know, leaps and bounds from where it was, you know, 20 years ago. So I think people are able to prepare the players the best that they can so they can perform at the highest ability. So I could definitely attest to that one for sure.
Well, and that's why you see guys like LeBron James pour literally millions and millions of dollars into their body, because kind of like what Ryan said, look at the amount of muscle and just mass that dude has at his size. And the fact that he's been able to play this long, yeah, dude, you kind of have to invest that much money into taking care of yourself, because otherwise it is so easy for your body to break down like that. It's not quite the same thing, but as a Colts fan, I remember Bob Sanders, man.
Yes, Bob Sanders.
The problem is he launched his body around like a freaking nuclear missile, so of course he never played a full season because he was just like flinging himself around like he wasn't made of bones.
Yeah. Earned him Defensive Player of the Year, but also earned him lots of trips to the IR.
Yeah, exactly. Also another former Charger. I was very betrayed when he went to then San Diego. I was very mad about that. So I would love to talk more about the Chargers. I'm pretty sure we could do this for at least another 3 straight hours. But unfortunately, we need to move on to the Rams. So we will close out the Chargers segment with this question, though. What are your expectations for them next year? And I'll throw a caveat on top of this. Give us a record prediction.
Playoff team. Expectations,
whoa,
playoff team.
Woo, right off the bat. All right.
I thought this year they were a playoff caliber team with the talent. Obviously, injuries played a huge role in that. Obviously, there was, you know, some of the coaching blunders, if you want to call it that. You know, you go out with a rookie QB, but they finished top 10 both offensively and defensively. There's no reason. And they ended up finishing 7-9. So, you know, you turn that to 9-7 with the format now with 7 playoff teams, and they could certainly be in the playoffs. So, And considering they blew six leads, you know, they could easily be 9-7, 10-6, 12-4. So yeah, I think the expectation is playoffs. Even though you have a brand new coach, brand new staff, seeing what he did in 1 year, there's no reason we can't see him do that in 1 year at the Chargers to make the playoffs with the roster they currently have. Add a couple playmakers in free agency, have a great draft, which I think Staley will be very influential in this draft. So records are hard this far out, not even knowing the schedule. I think I could put him though at 10-6, 11-5. I don't want to go too crazy and say 13-3.
Ryan, it's sports radio. We don't let facts stop us. You just gotta go for
there
it.
There are no, yeah, exactly. So I'll go 10-6. I think that's a reasonable expectations and make the playoffs.
Double digits, not bad for all you Chargers fans listening out there. Ryan is predicting double digit wins in Brandon Staley's first year as the head coach. But yeah, like Ted said, we got another LA team that we want to talk to you about and sort of get your thoughts on. That's the LA Rams, obviously. They were unfortunately eliminated in the playoffs in the divisional round against the Green Bay Packers. I think the big question kind of after you leave that game and all over the course of the past season, maybe the past two seasons as well, is just, is Jared Goff the long-term answer for the Rams? Because, I mean, it started as a perfect marriage, but, I mean, there's reports surfacing that, you know, Sean McVay wants to take a serious evaluation at his entire team, and that, of course, includes the quarterback position. A lot of people are saying he's not as happy with the way the progress that Jared Goff has been or has not been making. So, I mean, just really, you know, sort of like a baseball analogy here, I challenge you with some high heat, just, is Jared Goff the answer for the Rams?
Well, that's the $134 million question, and everyone asks it. Unfortunately, it really doesn't matter if he's a long-term option because he's at least a two-year option. There's no way to get out from under his contract. The guarantees are insane, and the cap hit's like $90 million, so you're not going to pull a Gurley and cut him and eat the $15 million. You'd be eating $90 million, and he constitutes him and I was looking today, him and Aaron Donald take up almost 50% of the Rams cap. That's kind of Les Snead is a fun GM, super aggressive what he does. He keeps the offseason so interesting, makes it fun to cover. But unfortunately, he kind of made this bed, and he's going to have to sleep with it. So that being said, Jared Goff can be a serviceable quarterback. Jared Goff can be a good quarterback. We saw a 2018 Jared Goff who put up very good numbers. I don't want to say MVP level, but he was kind of in the conversation for a lot of the year, had some phenomenal games, led the Rams to the Super Bowl. That was an offense-led unit. It wasn't like this year where the defense led the team. So he can certainly be good enough. Part of it's play calling. I love Sean McVay, but I was fairly vocal about I didn't love all the play calling that McVay did. I think he put Goff in bad situations. Part of it is Goff needs to get better pre-snap. He's not a mobile guy. He's not a guy that can extend the play very long. So he needs to assess things better pre-snap. And a lot of that is just putting work in the offseason, getting in the film room, really studying the game, studying what defenses do, putting in the work outside of the field. Because guys like Tom Brady, he's not a mobile guy, and he's made a career of just making pre-snap decisions. So if Goff can get better like that, I think he can easily get back to his better days, because he's a very accurate quarterback. He has a really good arm. He can put the ball places that a lot of quarterbacks can't. The tools are there. They just have to know how to use those tools, and it's not necessarily maybe what Sean McVay wants to do all the time on offense, but they're stuck with him for at least 2 years, so you got to make it work to the best of your ability.
So I'm glad you said that Goff's problems are pre-snaps, because this is a rumor that was out and about. I believe it was his rookie year, maybe it was his sophomore year, but there were rumors that since the NFL changed the rule to the amount of time the coach is allowed to talk to quarterbacks before the headsets turned off, that McVay was literally feeding Goff information up until about the 4 second mark of like, okay, this, if they do this, you're going to check down this guy. And basically it was McVay playing Madden just in real life.
100%
off there. So I was about to ask, so you think those rumors are true?
Yeah, no, I think 100%, and it's not anything illegal or they were doing anything wrong, but McVay was totally kind of playing, like you said, Madden, playing quarterback, telling Goff exactly where he wants the ball to go, telling him certain what coverages were doing, what the defenses were scheming, and that really helped Goff out. So he was able to literally just focus on the physical part of the game, just getting the ball out, because he has the physical tools. You know, 2 years ago, he was the third most rolled out quarterback in the NFL, right behind Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. So I know he's not the most gifted physical quarterback, but he can do it. I mean, he has the arm strength. He has the arm tools. It's just the mental side of it. And a lot of that is pre-snap. And a lot of that is just studying off the field, you know, film study, learning defenses, learning what certain scheme looks do. I think of a game, guys, this year against the Miami Dolphins when they kept throwing cover zeros at him. And again, didn't love Sean McVay's play calling that he kept going empty backfield during those instances. But a lot of that as a quarterback, you say, okay, because let me break it down really simply for you. Cover zero, there's going to be more guys rushing than you have blocking. So you got to get the ball out very quick or call a timeout and change something or audible, or you got to change something up. That being said, that means there's a receiver that's probably going to be wide open right off the snap because you don't have enough guys in coverage. Literally, every time they're playing cover zero, the Dolphins secondary is playing 7 to 8 yards off the ball. So you do it, you snap the ball, get it to your outside receiver, that's an automatic 4 yard gain. Automatic. He makes a guy miss, he could go to the house. But if you can take an automatic 4 yard gain every time, you'll take it. And Goff wouldn't recognize that. He snapped the ball and hold on to it and he ended up fumbling twice, throwing two interceptions. And so it's just those little mental mistakes that he needs to work on. And there's just small little recognition things pre-snap that he can fix. I mean, you can learn that. It's not like it's unlearnable. It's just a matter of if he'll put in the work this offseason to do it.
So I know you said that the Rams are kind of locked into Jared Goff for the next 2 years. But, you know, hypothetically, let's say they could make a move and they could acquire a veteran quarterback. Do you like any names out there that would fit a McVay system pretty well? I mean, sort of names that we sort of kind of heard lately are, you know, Matt Ryan could be on the block, Carson Wentz, obviously, Matthew Stafford from Detroit, Jameis Winston's going to be a free agent. We don't know what's going to happen with the Cowboys, but Dak Prescott possibly could be out there. I mean, just any of those veteran names sort of intrigue you? Or is it just purely like stick with Goff and they'll draft a guy possibly to back him up, sort of give him some competition, maybe a Mac Jones, a Kyle Trask, Brock Purdy, maybe a Jamie Newman? Because I know you guys don't have first-round picks, so I mean, you guys are going to have to sort of angle around. You guys are going to have some compensatory picks for the Brad Holmes signing, Dante Fowler Jr. and Corey Littleton moving off to other destinations. So you guys could possibly move up and try and get a guy that you guys like, but I mean, just what do you think, like, any of those names out there in the draft, any of those veteran names, like, just hypothetically, what do you think?
As a Big 12 guy, stay the hell away from Brock Purdy.
Well, Amr, your latter point is what's going to happen. They're going to keep Goff, roll with Goff, and maybe draft a guy that they can compete with him and develop over time. And after those 2 years, they can decide if they want to move on.
Sure.
But for the sake of a fun, because I did this on Twitter, I've asked two different scenarios, like which fans maybe would do that are actually realistic. Because I want to talk realistic. Everyone wants Deshaun Watson. It's not
course.
Realistic. There's no way that's going to happen. They have no draft capital to trade.
But Ryan, they have a first round pick, and according to everyone on Twitter, that's all it takes to get Deshaun Watson. Just one first round pick.
I guess, yeah. Cooper Kupp and first round pick 2 years from now. So realistically, though, there's two names that could actually happen, because if you trade contracts that are similar. One is Carson Wentz, who I think the Eagles have come out and said they really believe in. I don't know how much that's just smoke. Who knows what they really believe, but they're saying they think they can turn him around. I think he fits better anyway if you were to go to Indianapolis with Reich over there. But the other name that I'm actually really intrigued by that I got, I don't say what I want to say got hate, but really no Rams fans were on board, but I think it could actually be a good fit and the swap would be pretty much perfect, is Kirk Cousins out in Minnesota. I think Cousins he's had a good career. He's not a flashy guy. His best seasons were when Sean McVay was his offensive coordinator in Washington, threw for over 4,000 yards each year, had, you know, right around that 9-8 interception, you know, had just really, really good numbers. And he's done well in Minnesota. I think they're happy with him. Obviously, they extended him, but their contracts are identical. Kirk Cousins has 2 years left on his deal. It's fully guaranteed. It's about $34 million per year. Jared Goff over the next 2 years is owed $34 million over those 2 years. I don't know if Minnesota would do it, but for the Rams, it would make sense because you get a guy that you know can run McVay's system, had a good success with it. Maybe each guy, a fresh start would do them well. So I don't think that will happen. I don't even think either team is looking to move either guy specifically for each other, but it's one that makes sense and could realistically actually happen if the team's entertained it.
Interesting. How badly are the Rams going to miss Staley, and is this the start of a, for lack of a better term, crosstown rivalry between McVay and Staley?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, anytime you have two teams in the same city, there's some rivalry, probably more so with fans, especially in the NFL, because they play so infrequently. They basically play every 4 years.
Well, and New Yorkers are known for their kindness. So
yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think they'll definitely be. We saw it, you know, in Saturday's game with the Packers and Rams, because, you know, LaFleur being on, you know, friends with Sean McVay and the staff, so there's that friendship rivalry. So I'm sure there'll be some jabbing going back and forth between the two. The Rams are obviously going to miss him. I mean, what he did for this defense was amazing, short of remarkable. And I would expect them to look within to promote. Again, who Brandon Staley brings with him, we'll see over the next week or so. But guys like Aubrey Pleasant, who's the, you know, cornerback coach, Eric Henderson's the defensive line coach, Joe Barry's the linebacker coach, all three of those guys could be potential replacements for Staley for the Rams. Jim Leonard is a Wisconsin defensive coordinator, and he was linked to the Rams last year before the Rams ended up deciding to go Brandon Staley, so that's another name they could entertain again. But yeah, he'll certainly be missed. It's a big loss for the Rams, but you know, the Rams have a history of getting coordinators poached every offseason. So it's nothing new for them. It'll just be a way that how they adapt and keep moving forward.
So here's a name for you. Former defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams, Wade Phillips. He recently came out on Twitter and he said, "I want to retire from being retired." So Do they give him a call and be like, "Hey, we want to welcome you back with open arms and sort of take over the defense again"? Like, what do you think about that?
Fun question. I love Wade Phillips, but it's not going to happen.
Okay.
So they're,
that's fair. Put it to rest right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they moved on and it was no love lost or hard feelings. It ended fine. It wasn't like a bad breakup, but McVay clearly said he wanted to go a different direction. He wanted a younger, not old, not that old is bad, but he wanted a fresher mind, I guess, in a sense of defensive schemes where, you know, Wade's had his system in place for years and years and years. Wanted a guy that would make more adjustments throughout the game, which is not Wade Phillips' MO. He has his defense, and that's what you're running throughout the game. Deal with it. So no, I don't see any chance Wade Phillips is back, but I would like to see Wade Phillips back in the league. I think he's a phenomenal coach. He should be a Hall of Famer. And I think with these six new coaches, you know, getting hired, I would be shocked if he doesn't at least get a couple interviews for their DC job.
Agreed. So switching from free agents as far as the coaches are concerned, let's go into the free agents for the players are concerned. I know we kind of touched on this with the Chargers and some of their priority free agents, but with the Rams, I know they're usually always cash strapped because they're always wheeling and dealing, and they're extending
yep.
Jalen Ramsey, and then they extended Corey Littleton a while back, and just all the stuff. So they're usually pretty, you know, it's hard for them to manage their salary cap to sort of re-sign some players. You usually let them walk. So I know there's some great pieces that are going to be free agents. You got John Johnson, who had such a great season. Malcolm Brown, part of that triple-headed monster in their backfield. Leonard Floyd, who you mentioned a couple of times already. He had such a great resurgent year after being sort of labeled a bust. So, I mean, you got to look at that. And then Morgan Fox on the defensive line. I kept hearing his name whenever the Niners and Rams play. I'd be like, who is this guy? And then so he sort of made a name for himself. Maybe he's going to earn a contract in the offseason. So of those like guys, maybe some guys I didn't mention, just who do you think are the priority free agents if they could bring anybody back that you would want to have back in a Rams uniform?
Yeah, well, I'll just start on offense with guys you didn't mention. Gerald Everett and Josh Reynolds, I think, are both gone. Have had good careers with the Rams, have been fun players. Unless they can get him for, you know, unless they can get like an Everett for under $1 million a year, or Josh Reynolds for, you know, right around that $1 million, they could maybe bring him back. I know they like both players. I just don't think they can afford him, and they can find different guys in the draft they can use to fill. Gerald Everett wasn't even the main tight end, and they drafted Bryson Hopkins last draft, who I think can overtake him as the tight end number two right behind Higby. So I don't anticipate either of those guys being back. Malcolm Brown, you know, question mark as well. I think we've seen for sure that Cam Akers is the guy. So I don't know if they'll spend much on a third running back. Having him and Daryl Henderson, I think they'll be fine with, and they can just have a rookie or a practice squad guy kind of come fill in. Love Malcolm Brown. I just think unless he takes a super cheap deal, we won't see him back either. On defense, their biggest priority has got to be Leonard Floyd, but there's just no way they're going to be able to afford him. With the year he had, he's going to command, you know, double-digit millions. I know it's one year, but he's a former first-round pick, so you could see the talent. You could see how he does in a good system that works around his abilities. So I just don't think they'll be able to afford him. Same with John Johnson. I love John Johnson, but the writing was kind of on the wall when they drafted two safeties in this year's draft, and they drafted one in last year's draft. They were kind of prepping, knowing there was no way they were going to bring John Johnson back. So you have Taylor Rapp, you have Jordan Fuller, you have Terrell Burgess. Nick Scott played a lot, more of a special teams guy, but he played safety later down the season. So as much as I love for John Johnson to be back in a Rams uniform, I just think having those four guys with the cap strap situation they have, there's no way they'll be able to afford to bring him back when they have guys that can play at a close level and a guy in Jordan Fuller who had a breakout year as a sixth-round pick. So it's going to be a tough offseason, guys. You know, they're $20 million over the cap right now. Like I said, that'll change once, you know, some guys come off the books. But they don't have a lot to work with, and they're not going to be able to entice many people when they have no money. So Lessing's going to have to work some magic, restructure some contracts, and most of their work's going to be done in the draft, which, you know, they'll have, I think, 8 picks or so after all the compensatory picks come through. So that's going to be where the most of their work will get done this season.
So going to a guy you just mentioned, and I was a fantasy owner of his with Daryl Henderson. Ryan, I am begging you, show me the light here, because I finished last in my fantasy football league. I need to know, can I trust these Rams running backs? Is Cam Akers finally going to be the dude after this year? Is he going to be the feature back, or is it going to be keep being a running back by committee? Because you look at Akers' last 6 games, he finished with 93.5 rushing yards per game, just over 4 yards per attempt, and 3 total rushing yards. So is he going to be the guy they draft, or should I just stay away from all of them again?
Cam Akers is the guy. He's the guy going forward. Daryl Henderson was always drafted as a complimentary change of pace back. When he was taken in the 3rd round, and then last year when Gurley got let go, there was tons of fans saying, all right, time for Hendo time. Like, he's going to be the featured back. That's just not how he's built. That wasn't what he was at Memphis. He's a home run hitter. He's change of pace, slasher style back that's going to get, you know, 10 or so carries a game. I know he had some games this year where they made him the bell cow guy, and he had some really good games. That's just not why they brought him in. He was drafted to be that change of pace, home run hitter. Cam Akers was drafted to become the bell cow back. He had a really good career at Florida State overall. And then you mentioned it, the last down the stretch, we saw him featured. Part of the reason that I think why the Rams ended up losing to the Packers is because McVay went away from him a little too much in that Packer game and took the ball out of his hands when he was their biggest threat on offense. So for fantasy owners going into next year, Cam Akers is the guy. Unless something changes, unless they draft another running back, I would expect him to be your, you know, typical 18 to 22 carries a game kind of guy.
Yeah, definitely over the course of the playoffs as well. I mean, in those 2 games, I mean, he was looking really, really good. So there's high promise for Cam Akers going into the new season in 2021. But I do know Sean McVay, I mean, he went on record saying that he kind of wanted to employ that running back by committee approach that, you know, my team, the San Francisco 49ers, Kyle Shanahan sort of employs, where it's just like you never know who's going to be the feature back. So, I mean, there's an element of surprise there when you don't know who's going to be the hot hand. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that whole, you know, committee back there. But maybe it will be Cam Akers who emerges from the top. As we move on, though, Aaron Donald. I don't know what we can say about Aaron Donald that hasn't been said already. I mean, just the guy is an absolute game wrecker on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, he gets double teamed pretty much every single snap, and he still finds a way to put up monster stats. I think there's times where he gets triple teamed and he still finds a way to get into the backfield. I mean, the guy is just an absolute beast on that side of the ball. It's amazing that the Rams have him to anchor that defensive line and be a leader on the defense as well. Just Ryan, in your own personal opinion, where does Aaron Donald land on your, like, all-time defensive list of, you know, just top to ever play the game?
Oh, man. Well, that I've watched, he's definitely the best that I've watched. I mean, the guy is so good. You know, looking back through, you know, the annals of history, obviously Reggie White was a phenomenal pass rusher. You know, John Randall, guy doesn't get talked about, but I love John Randall. Yeah. He's just a beast. So many guys, if you look just at the Rams, Deacon Jones and, and guys like that, were phenomenal, but just in current times, Aaron Donald is far and away, I think, the best defender I've ever watched. What he's able to do, his quickness, his speed off the snap is what separates him, because he's not, I mean, he's a big dude. He's, don't get me wrong, the guy is an absolute tank, but just pure stature, there's other players that are bigger than him. He just utilizes his body better than those players do. And he's so fast and so quick. And he's just, you know, that was another reason why they lost the game. He wasn't fully healthy, wasn't able to really do what he does and get after the quarterback, get after Aaron Rodgers. You could see in the, I mean, the Packers ran the ball all over the Rams, and part of that is Aaron Donald wasn't able to shed blockers to, you know, fill his gaps like he usually does. I'm not taking anything away from him. He played with torn rib cartilage, but that is a huge reason why they weren't able to implement the defense that we saw all year long. But yeah, the dude is awesome. I'm glad he's locked up in LA for a long time. Hopefully finish his career here. Cause he's a good dude, good teammate, and a phenomenal player.
So really quickly, you brought up a name that just reminded me of a great story. Deacon Jones is, I remember a couple of years before he died, they interviewed him and they were like, well, with all the concussion stuff coming out, your infamous head slap whenever you'd sack a quarterback, do you feel bad that you probably concuss guys doing that? He went, no. And the reporter was like appalled. He was just like, well, why not? He's like, because I was trying to concuss him.
Yeah.
And like, that was it. That was the entire
interview. Yep. That was his purpose.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Aaron Donald being up there with him, I think that's more than fair. So I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked with the Chargers. Where are your expectations next year as my cat runs behind me? And what are your expectations for the Chargers this year or for the Rams this year and record prediction?
Yeah, man, expectations are going to, I think, tempered is the best way to put it. Yeah, tempered expectations because they're going to lose. This team's going to look very different. They're going to lose a lot of players, unfortunately, in free agency. You lose your defensive coordinator. And, you know, Brandon Staley, we've talked about a bunch. So there's going to be that transition of whether they promote from within, whether they bring in someone new and have a whole new defensive scheme. You're not going to be able to sign a lot of guys. You don't have a first-round pick. But you still have Sean McVay. You still have his, you know, genius. You still have him as a head coach. So I think this is still a winning football team. Just looking at the team, the state of the organization right now, I'd probably say 9-7 and maybe just outside of the playoffs. Obviously, that hopefully can change when we see what happens in free agency, if they can restructure some cap situations, if they can draft really well. But just looking at what they're losing and how they finished, I would say probably about 9-7 and just on the outside looking in.
Yeah, you also have to look at the fact that just the division they play in is just so tough because, I mean, the Niners, unfortunately, suffered a lot of injuries. They're going to be a lot tougher next year. The Seahawks are always a tough out. I mean, maybe with the hiring of Adam Gase, that'll be a little bit different. I mean, we'll see about what's going to play out there with their offensive coordinator situation. And then the Cardinals, I mean, Kyler Murray had a very up-and-down year, so, I mean, he's going to be a lot tougher too. So, I mean, yeah, the Rams are definitely going to have their work cut out for them. But, I mean, with Sean McVay at the helm, I think they're in a good spot, and we'll just see what happens with the defensive coordinator replacement. So we'll kind of close this out. We only got, you know, a couple more questions here for you, Ryan. We once again just can't thank you enough for coming on. Really appreciate you taking some time to sort of, you know, stop by, talk with us about LA football, talk about your, you know, life story about creating the network. And but just really quick, Ryan, just which LA team has the better new uniforms in your opinion?
Oh, man, great question. Yeah, the Chargers have the better uniform overall.
The Chargers uniforms are pretty sweet.
Chargers have to be one of the best in the league. I will say this, though. The Rams got a lot of heat for their logo release, got a lot of heat when the unis came out, and I think I didn't hate them as much as a lot of people, but I think even for people that hated them, they've grown on people throughout the season. So I do actually like the Rams uniforms, too. I think the helmets, the decals, I like the bone color uniforms that some people hate. I kind of like it. I think the numbers, the gradient, which people hate, but I think that's one of those things that we'll see in 2 years. Every uniform has it. It's just one of those weird, trendy things that all of a sudden every team adopts. So I do like the Rams uniform, but the Chargers are like the best uniform in all of football.
Rate the new stadium 1 to 10.
Oh, it's a 12.
12?
12. Okay.
I got a tour last February. Dang, it's almost been a full year. Before it was completed, so I didn't see the finished product at the time. Just the unfinished magnitude of it was unreal. Like, you just walk in and it is massive, huge. It is an unreal facility, top-notch everything. They have like a champagne bar. They have it's LA, it's Los Angeles. You go there for a day out. You don't go there necessarily to watch a football game. There's going to be so much when fans can actually go. It's just going to blow people away. It is an unreal work of art.
I will say this probably won't play well with LAFB listeners, but I absolutely despise the Rams because of what they did in my hometown of St. Louis. That's why I will write about the Chargers all the live long day, but I will not write about the Rams. But as soon as I saw like the stadium unveiling videos and stuff, I'm like, yeah, you really want to get that in St. Louis. Like, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Absolutely, because it is a piece of art. And
the open air design is just so well done. Like, it's just is the perfect California stadium.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but your listeners won't be able to see this, but if you can picture the stadium, how it obviously has the circular part, and then it has, like, the point, if you look at the roof, how it's kind of, like, shaped like a triangle, if you will. where that point is, there's actually underneath that point a 6,000-seat concert amphitheater.
Because of course there is.
So that just shows how huge it is. The fact that you have the stadium, then you have like a concourse that has like vendors and shops, and then you have a 6,000-seat amphitheater at the end of that point. It's unreal. It's massive.
Jesus. All right. So we will close out this great, great interview with possibly the most important question Ryan Dyrou has ever been asked. Ryan, is Sean McVay the hottest coach in the NFL?
Like just purely on looks?
Just purely on looks.
1,000%.
All right. 1,000%. There we go. He is 3 for 3.
It's not even, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, I guess, you know, challenges him a little bit. Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's, look at Sean McVay. It's Mr. Hair Gel. He's 34 years old
Kingsbury
still.
Kingsbury is like he's too handsome to be the most handsome, right? Like, he's too stereotypically good looking. Like, it's Sean McVay by far.
If Sean McVay somehow made sipping rosé on Hard Knocks look cool, not many guys can sit barefoot by their pool with their girlfriend drinking rosé and actually look cool, and Sean McVay made it look cool.
And there you go, guys. Desai guys getting the real answers here.
That is true. You only get the best questions asked and the best questions answered on the Desai guys.
By the way, this is what the show would look like if Amir was not here. Like, this is why I need someone to keep him in check.
Keep him reined in. But yeah, I mean, like we said 1,000 times already, but we're going to say it 1,001 times now. Just really appreciate you giving us this opportunity to have the podcast, Ryan. I mean, just we're having a total blast with it. I mean, just it's amazing that, you know, we're part of the crew at the LAFB Network and just all the stuff that you're doing. I mean, we can't be more excited for what comes in the future, and just we're super glad to be a part of it.
Absolutely, guys. Yeah, I couldn't be more thrilled that you've been on this journey for as long as you have, and hopefully, you know, hopefully you stick with me a little longer and ride this thing out. You guys are doing great. Love the podcast. I try to listen to it whenever I can. So you guys are, you know, having fun with it. That's the goal, but also growing it and getting better and better each week. So keep that up. And thanks for having me on and chatting with me and putting up with the noisy baby.
Hey, man, we're going to stick with you as long as you'll have us. So as like Amir said,
deal.
Thank you for the opportunity and everything. And thank you to the listeners for listening to all this. I hope we gave you guys some great insight and everything. Don't forget to like, subscribe, go to the LAFB Network website. You can also find them on Facebook and Twitter. Find me at TadDesai94 on Twitter, Amir at AmirDesai23 on Twitter. Ryan, you want to give your handles a shout out?
Yeah, I got at Ryan Dyrud LAFB on Twitter, and then just the main account at LAFB Network.
Awesome, awesome. All right, well, thank you again for stopping by, and as always, stay safe, everyone.